Right. It is 6 o'clock on March 5th. Call the Local Ethics Commission meeting to order. Commissioner Ignofem. Commissioner DeGroff.
Present.
Chair Daly.
Here.
And if we can have a motion to enable Chair Daly's participation remotely due to work reasons.
Second.
Commissioner Ignofem?
Aye.
Oh, all in favor?
Aye.
Oh.
Aye. All right, we call this to order, got the roll call. The next item on the agenda is citizen comments. Is there anyone at the meeting today who wishes to speak?
Yes, there is. Or if you can address the podium too, just so it's into the recording. Thank you.
I have a simple question.
Hold on 1 second.
Yeah, I can't hear him.
Mic's not on.
There we go. Thank you.
Great.
I asked a couple of people here about something that was sent to the Board of Trustees from you guys about recent events, and I didn't get any answers, and I'd like to know how to find those documents. Stuff that you sent, the Local Ethics Commission sent to the Board of Trustees protesting whatever you were unhappy about. Someone tell me where to find those documents? Or am I wrong about something being sent to them?
I had a text conversation with Mr. Gimbel, and his question was, at our first meeting earlier this year, we sent a request to the board to pause until to hold a pause on the vote. And I didn't know the answer to in what format we sent that.
I couldn't figure out how to ask the question.
Yeah.
Or I would have done a FOIA, which Matt and Luke.
I believe it's reflected in
fears.
Yeah. So I think in terms of the day that the initial complaint was filed, it was Chair Daly had conveyed a request to delay continuation.
Meeting result of the meeting on January.
No, 30th. How is that conveyed?
Right.
When you say she conveyed that, was there an actual letter formed? Did the board get a copy of our minutes which reflected that request? Was there anything in writing that reflected that request
from the
I know
Ethics
that
Commission
process
at
happens.
That at
yeah.
that time?
Referring to something.
Can you turn your mic on?
You can understand my confusion.
Yeah, they were refused to refer.
I can't
I
remember.
I did not send anything in particular. I mean, we made the request in the meeting, which would have been reflected at the minutes, and the village administrator would have been aware and communicated that. That was my
okay,
understanding.
So there's no document.
Nothing that came from me. It would have been reflected in the meeting minutes.
Yeah, that would be the document that I would expect that information to be.
Okay.
Yeah, Mr. Gimbel, I'm not sure if I had a direct documentation. I had verbal
that
conversations.
Happened.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Well, again, just to be clear, I think there is a document. It's the meeting minutes that reflected our request.
Okay, so where do I get it?
The minutes?
Yeah, you would FOIA a copy of the meeting minutes for the meeting of the Ethics Commission, which was on, I believe, January 31st, I believe it was.
And we should have them on the village website as well. And Margie, do you want to public comment? I think we have one more citizen comment.
Okay.
Charity.
Margie Sukander, River Oaks Drive. Sorry, I'm a little bit late, but I have handouts, if I may. Can you help me? Do you mind? Oh, Luke? Thank you. There are two sets and everybody gets one. And I think one of the attachments is a shorter page. Thank you. I wanted to provide you with something in writing. Since I've been identified three times already as a complainant, and I also wanted to reply to, some memos from Mr. Molina and Mr. Walsh, both. I think it's very important that you all get the ethics ordinance correct, however long that takes. I sense that you would like to wrap it up, as would probably the board. But given that we're revising from 3 years ago, I think it's really important we get best in class and that we get the ordinance correctly. I think in here, the most important things are at the top. You are missing some key information that you need, I believe, and that's the September 29th of 2021. Your own EC meeting packet has the immediately prior ordinance that was in effect before April 25th of 2022, when the board approved your changes. And in that ordinance, there's a copy in your packet. Pardon me. It states the ordinance doesn't limit you to only prohibited political activities and gifts. It grants you the full authorities that you had. So President Ducey on February 10th, and I believe Mr. Molina, both said that going back to 2010, the board had always had the authority for conflicts of interest. Somewhere between October of 2010 and your September 2021 packet, the Ethics Commission was written into the ordinance. And the ordinance clearly allowed you full authorities, not about enforcement, but certainly over ethical standards. So I think it's important that you know that was not in Mr. Walsh's packet, February 5th. I think that was to the board, and the longer one, 2-page version to you all, I believe, since then. So I think you need to have that and look at that. I know this village runs off of meeting packets, puts a lot of information in there, also audio. So if you haven't listened to key dates and times, I encourage you to do that. I still say that the January 2022 EC meeting packet is also key. And if you haven't looked at that, that is also a page in your handout I gave you. And it's key because that is where the EC was limited to those two sections, of all the sections limited to those two. And that came from Greg Smith in the margins on a certain page, I think it was 16, of that packet. You may already know all this, but I think it's important to have it on record and to go over it as well. Your EC webpage directs complainants to file a complaint with the Ethics Commission. So that page also has two recent postings, one that occurred this week from Mr. Molina with an attachment of the February 5th, I believe, Mr. Walsh's. So those are on there. So if somebody thinks, a resident thinks, oh, I would like to make a complaint, where do I go? The Ethics Ordinance says file it with the Village Board. The website says file it with the Ethics Commission. I don't know that your packet from last Friday reconciles all of that all the way through, but I would encourage you to do that. On that note, the last page that you added to your revisions, the nice clean one at the bottom of the packet, has someone filing a form that goes to the village. So if you want confidentiality and if you want anonymity, that doesn't work. Because it was the village staff that broke confidentiality for me. There's some other important things in this handout that I'm giving you. And there's also a reference to someone else who worked in anti-corruption about the importance of perceived conflicts of interest. So I think those are just as important as whatever you might call actual conflicts of interest. And it's all about integrity. And for the village to have integrity with its residents, which Neighborhood Dialogues came back and said doesn't exist regarding development. And other people have said is lacking in other areas. So I thank you for your time and consideration. I encourage you to please review what I handed out. And if you have any questions.
May I ask a question? You had several dates, and I just want to make sure I have those dates that were important that you referenced.
Yes.
Can you give them to me again?
September 29th of 2021,
okay.
Your Ethics Commission meeting packet,
okay.
Which contains the old ordinance, prior ordinance. Also the January 20th, 2022.
On January 20th, okay.
22,
yeah.
Your EC packet that has the changes that limited you, restricted you to the two sections.
Okay. And you mentioned October 2010?
Kathy Aducey said at the February 10th board meeting that, and it's, I believe it's referenced in one of Mr. Walsh's memos to you, but she mentioned that the conflict of interest going back that far and maybe beyond resided with the village board. So I mentioned that date because September of 2021, the limitation to your authorities to two sections is not in that version. So somewhere in that gap. And the Ethics Commission wasn't around in 2010.
Got it. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Anything else? Thank you. Should I leave this on?
Thank you very much. Is that the end of the citizen comments?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Move on to the approval of the meeting minutes of February 19th, 2025. Do I hear a motion to approve?
I move to approve the meeting minutes.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We'll move on to old business, which is really the guts of this meeting, which is to discuss our recommendations to the amendments of the Village Ethics Ordinance. I received the email about an hour ago with some additional comments. And I think from Commissioner Ignafo, would you like to walk through those or how would you all like to address this version that we've got in front of us?
These comments are from me.
Oh, I'm sorry. My apologies.
That's okay. So I'm happy to go through them as we have them, or if we want to talk about where we're at generally, and I can bring them up in the chronological course of the ordinance, whatever you prefer.
I think it may make some sense for you to just walk through your comments, unless Greg, you've got additional set of comments that you also want to go through.
No, you know, I think if we go back a little bit over a week, Peggy, as I recall, you had forwarded some comments based upon our last meeting. I went through them. I just have a couple of notes that I just figured were easy enough to talk about tonight instead of creating another draft for people to go through. And so I think we can just pop into those as they come up. I mean, maybe a good idea to just go through this document in order and have conversations in the various sections as we feel is needed.
That is fine with me. And I'm going to go through the older version of this that's got the red lines on it, because I think that's where the comments were coming from as opposed to the clean version. Does that make sense for you? Because I know that the clean version has different, that we've moved sections around. And so from a formatting perspective, it just isn't the same, doesn't have the same format.
That works for me.
Okay, as long as everybody's on the same page. Okay, so chapter 23, ethics, page 1. Does anybody have any comments on the changes that are input there?
None.
None from me.
Okay. Page two. Any comments there?
Just.
I'm sorry.
Just at the top of page two, where it starts with these ethical standards, that was what we moved from a prior location into the preamble.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
Yeah, we put that into the preamble. There were a couple of paragraphs later in the code where we moved one up here and then we moved two to the back into enforcement.
I have a quick clarification. Should this language that's now on page two, which appears to be under J, which is Illinois Criminal Code, should that language be moved up to the paragraph that actually is prior to the listing of the different citations, A, B, C?
No, my only hesitation with that is because the sentence preceding that itemization of the various codes ends with a colon, and then we go ahead and we list those codes. So I think the way to remedy that is to make the first paragraph 123.1A, and then the next main paragraph B, and then have what is now A through J be one through whatever.
If I may, maybe one way to do it would be the sentence in the middle of the preamble, which begins to the extent state or federal law, that one could begin a second preambular paragraph, and the language that is now under J could be come right after the purpose sentence there, right before two. I think it might make sense there.
I think that.
Does that work?
That I see what you're saying. That makes a lot of sense to me.
I like that also. I like having that language up
right
at
there.
The very top.
It
seems to expand on that first sentence and then make it a paragraph.
And then there's a new paragraph starting with to the extent.
Right.
I think.
And no letter or anything. Just it's part of the preamble.
Thank you.
Okay.
Yep. I agree.
Okay. I think that makes sense.
Yeah, Chairman. Okay. I want to make sure you heard that all.
Yeah. No, I've got it.
A lot easier.
Yeah, we're going to move the paragraph beginning these ethical standards to be after the sentence which ends village covered individuals and contractors. That goes there, and then where it begins to the extent state or federal law, that just becomes a new paragraph.
That's what I suggested. Yes.
Yep, I think that's a good suggestion. Anything else on page two?
And real quick, I don't see in the printed material. Oh, never mind. I got them right here. Ignore that. Sorry. Here.
All right. I'm going to move to page three. Anything on page three?
Nothing from me.
Nothing from me.
Page four?
Nothing.
Nothing from me.
Page five?
Nothing from me.
Page Same. Six?
Nothing.
Same.
Page seven.
Nothing.
Same.
Page eight.
Nothing.
Just look at something real quick. Nothing.
Page nine.
Nothing.
Same.
Page 10.
Nothing.
Same.
Page 11.
Yeah,
nothing.
I have.
For me.
Did I hear somebody have?
Yeah, I do. Can you hear me?
I'm
sorry at this. Okay. So there's language here that deals with anonymity in 123.6 duty to report in the second paragraph.
What page are we on?
Oh,
yeah, what page?
Okay.
Well,
okay.
Let's see,
so that's on page 12.
It looks to, okay. It's 11 on what I had made notes on in my computer. That's why.
Okay. No problem. We found it.
So we're good with 11.
We're good with 11 on
duty to report.
Yes.
Yes.
So, page
okay.
12, yep.
So starting with section 123.6, duty to report.
Correct. Let me just find the spot here. Okay, here we go. It says, after a report is made pursuant to this section, the reporting individual and the nature of the report shall remain anonymous except to those required under this code to have such knowledge. I think we want to clarify a little bit further and add, and until such time that the matter must become public as provided for in this section. I think just so it's crystal
you're,
clear.
You're talking about the very last paragraph in that section?
Yeah, it would be
okay.
The second to last sentence.
Second, okay.
So after the report is made, reporting.
So there's a sentence that ends with the word knowledge.
Yes, I see it.
And I think we just want to make it clear that it remains confidential or anonymous until it has to become public, as provided for in other parts of the section of the ethics code. So we know when that's triggered.
Where are the other provisions of anonymity? Because maybe what we need to do, if we need to do it, we refer to the section.
It's throughout section 123.8 and should also be in 123.10.
Yeah, there's multiple parts. That's why we should maybe just say provided for in this code, or as provided for in this
chapter
is the right word.
Okay, hang on. All right, how about until such time as the complaint is required to be made public under the relevant provisions of this chapter?
Perfect.
Okay. I agree.
And then the next comment I had was in this paragraph, the next sentence. It speaks to retaliation against a village-covered individual or contractor for filing a complaint. We say it's prohibited. Should we be saying it's prohibited and a violation of this chapter
and constitutes a violation?
So it's one thing for it to not be allowed, but it should be stated clearly what it's a violation of.
That seems advisable to me.
So I have a question about who we are including in anti-retaliation. And I don't know that there's anything, I don't know that there's an avenue to protect a complainant, but we're not saying retaliation cannot be against just an individual who lives here, shouldn't be retaliated against also. Is that included in a village-covered individual?
I think the reason that that's not included here is because this section is the duty to report. And your average citizen has no, under this chapter, we don't have jurisdiction to create a mandate to report ethics violations. It's their decision. But what we are saying is if you're connected to the village as a contractor or a covered individual, you have an affirmative duty to report one.
So I think we need to also include then that any village covered individual or contractor may not retaliate against anyone who has filed a complaint.
That is a great point.
So there would be, I guess, two ways to do that. We could add something later or just add a separate provision in the language that says that retaliation for any report, any report made under this chapter is prohibited and constitutes a violation. Ooh. Right?
We could make that in 123.9. We have A through D. We could make that an E.
I agree.
I agree as well. It's just what I was looking at.
And then if that was done, then we could delete it from here because it would be covered already.
Agreed.
Oh, I don't think we should get rid of it there. I think it doesn't hurt to have it in both. And when you're talking about the duty to report, you know, I don't see any reason to get rid of it, because that is talking about the people that are required to report.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. If you find yourselves in the position as a village employees looking at this saying, do I have a duty to report? I think you want to see that you can't be retaliated against right
exactly.
in that section. Right. That give you guidance.
Your role is protected.
Yeah.
I agree.
I agree.
So, there's okay. No harm in that. Yeah, so we can add it as a general in 123.9e and leave it with the amendment in 123.6.
I'm writing this down. Okay, how about as a new section E, retaliation against any person who files a complaint is prohibited and constitutes a violation of this chapter, subject to the penalties and enforcement set forth above.
So I like that. Obviously, we only have jurisdiction over village covered individuals and contractors. So should we say retaliation by any village covered individual and or contractor for, as you had it written down? It's probably implied that those are, you know, I guess the point being is if another citizen were to try to retaliate against another citizen, we can't do anything
Correct.
About that.
Yep. Retaliation by any village covered individual or contractor against any person who files a complaint is prohibited and constitutes a violation of this chapter, subject to the penalties and enforcement set forth above.
I just want to make sure that aligns with what we have here in 123.6 that says retaliation against a village covered individual or contractor for filing a complaint under this ordinance is prohibited.
And constitutes
and,
a violation.
And we're adding and constitutes a violation.
Right. Does that align with what you added?
Well, in this one, I had tracked the language, but we had to change it so that it's retaliation by.
Yes.
So this is retaliation against a village covered individual or contract. So do you want me to put in retaliation by a village covered individual or contractor against a village covered individual or contractor? Because that would be the way to mirror it.
You know, I guess the way we could mirror it is we can say retaliation by a village covered individual and or contractor against any person for filing a complaint under pursuant to the duty to report is prohibited.
I'm sorry, I'm lost.
I don't want to limit it to just the duty to report.
Well, it would be present at the end too.
That's why it's
good. About this duty to report.
It's coming in twice
in that section.
In that section.
Okay.
What I'm contemplating is a village employee someday down the road being in a position where I've got to report my supervisor because of what I saw, and they want to look at this, and I want it to be crystal clear to them that they.
Yes.
Cannot be subject to retaliation without that superior violating the code. So,
completely agree with that. I want it to be equally clear, though, that no village covered individual or contractor can retaliate against somebody for filing the complaint. I don't want people to think if they have an ethics complaint against, you know, the building inspector that their permits aren't going to get.
Correct.
You know, approved
and
going
that
forward.
That would be covered under, I think, Greg's language in E now, right?
That Peggy that's, just read out and yeah. What'll be.
No, that's not covered in E. E is.
Let me read it again.
Yeah, read that again, please, Peggy.
Retaliation by any village-covered individual or contractor against any person who files a complaint is prohibited and constitutes a violation of this chapter, subject to the penalties and enforcement set forth above.
Got it. I agree with that.
Okay.
And then we were just tracking it
in
the duty. Yeah.
Anything else under duty to report?
Not from me.
Same, not for me.
Now I'm on page 13. That gets us to 123.8, Ethics Commission. Anything on this page A and B?
So I see your questions.
I do have comments on B.
And on B, I've got a comment on B1, so I'm going to hit that because you're starting at B3. So B1, the way it reads now is to the commission shall have the following powers and duties. One, to receive, consider, investigate, and make recommendations to the village board for enforcement of complaints of alleged violations of this chapter. I think it should just read for enforcement of alleged violations of this chapter. You can't enforce complaints.
I agree.
Well, and should you even eliminate of alleged?
Yes, we should actually exactly
right to violations,
because by the time it gets to the village board, we have determined as a body or the whoever's sitting in the commission at that point has determined that there was a violation and they're making a recommendation to the board. So, yeah, it should just be for enforcement of violations.
Except it's an alleged violation when we're investigating it. I mean, part of the what we're empowerment here is to investigate, and that's whether or not there's a, you know, you have to investigate before you can make that determination that it's in fact a violation.
Fair point.
Maybe what we need is an extra comma after investigate, so that the make recommendations really only applies to enforcement of violations. In other words, you have to have found that in order to make a recommendation. You aren't going to make a recommendation based on your investigation or based on your consideration or based on your receipt. You're going to base it on only findings, I would think. Does that make
sense?
How about
if we say to receive, consider, and investigate complaints made under this chapter and to make recommendations to the village board for enforcement of violations of the chapter?
It's even clearer, I think.
I like that. One caveat is we also have the power to fine.
Right. I think the decision was this board would be only recommending. I think that might have been just an oversight, but unless you want to recommend that to the board, that you have the power to fine. But I thought based on the discussion, everything was going to be recommendation. That might just need to be clarified here.
So yeah, I understood it that we can make recommendations. We make findings, but then and recommendations, but the enforcement has to come from the village board as an actual elected body.
So this is one of my comments. It's 123.8 C10 says the commission may fine any person who knowingly violates any provision of this chapter or who knowingly files a frivolous complaint.
Is that one of the subsections? It's C?
It's C.
I'm sorry, I was writing. Can you tell me where you are again right now?
Yes. 123.8, C10 on page 17.
Okay. Yeah, and that was one of my own comments that I just thought may have gotten missed. The commission, I have just language I just penciled in here. The commission may recommend to the, you have, however it is here, village president and board of trustees, to fine any person who knowingly violates.
Well, can we pause on editing 10 for now until we go through this chronologically so we're using the correct language that we want to use throughout? I think mm-hmm. for consistency of this section. I think this section gets a little dense and can be streamlined some using the Illinois Model Ethics Ordinance as kind of a template, but knowing that what has already been done here is so far and above what any other village has here in Illinois. And I looked at several villages here in Illinois, in California, in New York, and what River Forest has right now is wildly ahead of what other towns and villages have. So I want to compliment my two co-commissioners who have did all this hard work, and the village board for passing. Even what we have now is so much more powerful than what any other village has. And we can improve it as we have been over the last couple of meetings. And I think some of that will be streamlining in this section also.
Okay, so we're on 123.8, Ethics Commission. We finished B1. Where is the next?
I have on B3.
Mm-hmm.
This section discusses having a preliminary assessment of the complaint and then giving it to the village attorney. This preliminary assessment of whether it's a valid written complaint. It's not in the Model Ethics Ordinance, and I don't know that it's needed if what we receive, we determine, doesn't.
Where are you reading? What I've got is the commission is authorized to act upon the receipt of a written complaint alleging a violation of this chapter within the commission's purview by village covered individual or contractor. Upon receipt of a written complaint, the commission may, upon its assessment of the validity of a written complaint pursuant to the procedures below, investigate, conduct hearings and deliberations, issue recommendations for disciplinary actions, impose fines. So we've got impose fines. That's a no. That's a recommendation in accordance with 123.9 of this chapter, and refer violations of this chapter within the commission's purview to the appropriate attorney for prosecution. That's what I'm reading as B3.
So do we need this section, or is it additional language to?
It's the guts of the commission's authority. And it's couched in a lot of may language, right?
Is it duplicative of number one or of these other sections that come after it?
I view number one as kind of an overall statement as to what we can do. And then it gets more specific with three, because here we talk about conducting hearings and deliberations, which, are parcel arguably to an investigation, but, that turns this body into a fact-finding body that has the authority to ask questions of certain people. And I think that we want to maintain that language.
And I apologize that the part I was talking about of the that was related to a different section coming up. So, okay. I'm fine with that.
Okay, no problem. Moving on, anything?
Ask a quick question here, if I could. Uh-huh. So I'm wondering what is being envisioned when there's this, at the very end of three, it says refer violations of this chapter within the commission's purview to the appropriate attorney for prosecution. I think in another part, it says that if there's a criminal allegation, it should be referred. But are we envisioning an option where instead of making a recommendation to the board, the recommendation is to charge it civilly in the circuit court as a code violation as an option?
No, In my mind, the prosecution is criminal.
Okay,
I don't
well
think this
then.
commission is empowered in any way to do to create to begin any kind of civil enforcements.
Okay, because here then I would just say consider the language. Refer violations of this chapter within the commission's purview. Crimes are not really that. And if that's what you're focused on, maybe it should say that.
I think we can strike that language because we say earlier that if we think that the allegations constitute a crime, we are to refer it to the state, you know, the state's attorney or appropriate authority. So I don't think we need this last portion of the sentence after the word chapter. I think we can put a period there.
I mean, that would clarify it too. So
if it just says and refer violations of this chapter, that kind of is hanging.
The chapter word right before that chapter word earlier in the sentence.
So it should read.
I got it.
Issue recommendations for disciplinary actions and not impose fines should be and or fines. So issue recommendations for disciplinary action and or fines in accordance with section 123.9 of this chapter, period.
Right. Got it. Anything in sub 4?
No.
Not from
5?
Not from me.
How about C1, complaints?
Yes. So for the whole section, section C, this is where, and I think I figured out what my confusion was. To me, the language of B3 that we were just talking about overlaps significantly with section C. So to me, it felt like that was one step. I understand now that that is a summary of the powers. So that's helpful. But section C is, to me, it can be tightened. And this is where the Model Ethics Ordinance does have very clear language about how this process works in very simple, easy to read terms. And I think it would help me to understand this is a chronological statement of what the commission will do upon receipt of a complaint, correct? Is that what Section C does?
That's how I understand it.
Okay.
Yes.
So one of my challenges is at this point, we don't even know how complaints are filed. So we just start here with receiving a complaint, but we haven't yet talked about how they get filed. So, and maybe the way to handle that is to refer to complaints filed pursuant to section
123.10,
and then will be handled in this way. I think that would be, yeah, that would take care of that. Like,
I'm sorry, I'm just not understanding what the confusion is. What change are you suggesting that we make and where?
So at C1, we say complaints alleging a violation of this chapter. At this point, we haven't talked about how a complaint is to be filed. And so we have that now in subsection 10 or section 10. So if we had here complaints filed pursuant to section 10, alleging a violation of this chapter, shall be filed with, and we need to be really clear about what we want to do here. We want to file it with, this is the language that Matt added. Are we filing it with a form on the village website? Are we having an email sent to the chairperson of the Ethics Commission? And how are we making sure all of that can be handled anonymously if that's what the complainant wants to do?
So what specific language changes are you suggesting?
Well, I think we need to know how the complaints are going to get filed first, because this section talks about shall be filed with the commission upon receipt by the village unless the complaint alleges facts in the opinion of the village. Like, so
yeah, so
I think we need to know, how does the complaint get filed first?
I think we can say something here. Complaints filed pursuant to 123.10 shall be.
Hold on. Where? What page are we right now? And where am I?
I'm at the top. I'm at C1 at the top of 13.
Okay.
Well, it's 14 if you're hard printed copy. 13? Oh, you're on. We're working off the red line.
Okay, we're working off the red line. I apologize.
Just so we're all.
That's the second time I've made that mistake. But maybe this clarifies it. Complaints filed pursuant to 123.10 shall be handled by the commission as set forth below. And then we have the paragraphs below, which are procedural descriptions. Then we can have the sentence, the next sentence, if the complaint alleges facts which may constitute a crime, it shall first be referred to, and leave that as it is. And that way we're just saying at the beginning of this, here we are, now we're talking about procedure, but the very first thing is, if this looks like it may be a crime, it's not our purview, we send it to the state's attorney.
So
I like
complaints submitted pursuant to section 123.10. Can you repeat your language?
Shall be handled by the commission in the manner set forth below. In the manner set forth below, I think is fine, period. And then go to the next sentence. If the complaint alleges facts, leave it as is. And then,
what happened to complaints alleging a violation shall be filed with the commission upon receipt of the village? So are we getting rid of all of that?
I think we can get rid of it, because in 23.10, we are creating a process for filing the complaint, which sends it directly to the chair of the Ethics Commission. Is that addressed?
Yes. And then I don't think we need the second part of that. I think that whole first sentence can go away.
It could be replaced with
you just said. And then the second sentence regarding if it's a crime.
Stays as is.
Yes.
Okay. What we're getting rid of there is consulting the village attorney about that.
But that's covered, I think, generally. So it's your call anyway, whether it's going to get referred. Yeah.
I'm not against the change at all, but I just wanted to be clear that we're removing that and that we're aware of that. Yeah, I think it's fine.
It makes sense. Yeah, it really does.
Okay. Moving on.
All of us as attorneys, if we think it constitutes a crime, we got to report it anyway, mm-hmm. ethically.
Correct.
So, you know, it's like,
there.
Okay, so now we have the complaint received. And so then what are the first things we do after receiving that complaint? I think that's 2A.
Mm-hmm. And do you have any recommended changes to 2A?
Well, 2A talks about confidentiality without saying what we're doing yet.
Well, it does say that the way I view the confidentiality is it's tied to this gatekeeping function. So if you get an anonymous complaint, the anonymity shall be maintained to the extent possible by law. While there's this gatekeeping, is there a reason? Are there reasonable grounds? Is this a colorable claim? Once that's been made, then you either it gets dismissed because it's not, or it moves on to the next step. And then at some point, the person accused is entitled to notice. And at that point, anonymity drops away.
So this is where there is kind of a the terms used are sufficient evidence and reasonable grounds. And so my question for the village attorney is, are these formal legal terms with specific legal meaning? Because I don't know what sufficient evidence and reasonable grounds. I mean,
right. I understand.
Is it one of those things that you know it when you see it?
Yeah, that's how I would interpret it. And that's why I think that you got away at one point in a previous version, the word probable cause was thrown in. And I think that was eliminated because I think the idea here is it is your discretionary look at this and whether there's enough meat there and you know, you have the grounds not limited to, but giving examples of that, it's too vague. It's, you know, that list. And so the way I view it is you have to make a discretionary decision on whether this should move forward. And the standard is there enough here to move forward?
But I think you're right. I think it's, you know it if you see it. Kind of thing.
It's a judgment.
We have to have some guiding language.
Right, exactly.
Right, but
we don't want to get into defining it because then you've got scope issues.
Right.
It's that whole idea of reasonableness. It defines itself in some ways when you're doing the investigation.
Because if you have something too specific, what you end up with is a sort of preliminary, like a search warrant can be challenged. The probable cause can be challenged. I don't think that's intended here. It's supposed to be that this commission has the discretion to move it forward and that's not reviewable. The someone whose name can't say, well, I don't think you had enough here to even have me here at this hearing.
So then I'm troubled by the language sufficient evidence, because somebody could say, based on everything I know, there's no sufficient evidence for a hypothetical complaint against a commissioner who may or may not have, you know, sat in on meetings. But I know the whole background, so I'm going to say there's no sufficient evidence. I think it needs to be that the commission determines there's reasonable grounds to move forward, and they move forward. I don't think there needs to be an evidentiary decision.
So the way I viewed it, I thought about that, and I ended up concluding I agree. I think reasonable grounds alone may be a better way, but the way it's articulated every time it appears, it's almost like they're the same thing. Is there sufficient evidence to constitute reasonable grounds? That it's like they aren't two things. They're the same.
Yeah, I guess with that context, it could be a little redundant the way it's.
Yes, and I think it adds to the wordiness here.
So it could say that unless the commission determines that there are reasonable grounds that the complaint establishes, and just cut kind of that language between.
So wait, we're suggesting, are we talking about 2A right now on confidentiality?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And the suggestion is that there are two terms used at the gatekeeping function, but one determination. Is there enough to go forward? And I think what the other commissioners are suggesting is rather every time it says sufficient evidence and reasonable grounds, it just say reasonable grounds, and the sufficient evidence words are eliminated so that you're really testing for reasonable grounds.
So
I think that's the suggestion.
I think you're right.
Unless the commission determines that there are reasonable grounds that the complaint establishes a violation of this chapter within the commission's purview. And weren't we getting rid of within the commission's purview?
Yeah, we should get rid of that. It should just say, it should be a period after the word chapter.
Yep. Prior to the determination that a complaint is supported by sufficient evidence. So we want to get rid of that too.
Right.
Well, yeah. So that it should say prior to a determination by the commission that there are reasonable grounds.
That the complaint establishes mm-hmm. a violation.
Yeah. Okay. Consideration of complaints by the commission at a meeting shall be closed to the public. So that's really just dealing with
much more readable now.
Well, yeah, it is much more readable. And it's really just dealing with confidentiality at this point. It seems to me that we might want to move sub C next, because now it's important, I think, to say, hey, here's how you file a complaint. Complaints are going to be confidential. And then the next step, if we're trying to do this in a chronological order, would be this initial review, correct?
So the only thing is, though, and I think Lance pointed this out at our last meeting, is we're going to need the assistance of, Luke or Matt or other people at the village, to set up our meetings and coordinate this. So, getting them the village notice of the complaint so that we can have a meeting has to precede our next steps. And I think that's why that's here.
And I think maybe it should go up even earlier. It should go up as part of the initial setup.
It's not correct, because what we've written here is everybody gets this copy of this complaint after there's a determination of a reasonable basis for the complaint, which means that you've got to have the sub C, which is after we receive it, we're going to meet and conduct an initial review. I agree with you that we're going to have, for example, Matt set up a meeting, but there's no reason for Matt to receive the complaint itself while we're conducting an initial review. It's supposed to be confidential.
Good point.
I agree.
So let's move C to, flip B and C.
Okay.
Okay.
So
B, is there any changes to B?
Are we suggesting then that Matt doesn't get a copy of the complaint until after you make a determination as to the gatekeeping? Is that what we're saying?
I think that's right.
I think we can say we need a meeting, and we don't have to give him a copy of the complaint to say that.
Correct. Yeah, we don't. Relative to moving B to after C, I think we just move it to after D, so it would become D.
I'm sorry, B becomes D?
Yeah, and then C becomes B and D becomes C. You want to make it really confusing.
C becomes B.
Can I make the suggestion that I can get a copy of the complaint when it comes in, or the village attorney? I think that might be a good idea. Unless, of course, it says here, you're the person named. But since the village attorney is the advisor, and I have duties of confidentiality as well, ethically.
I don't think it's necessary. It's certainly not how we did the things at Cook County Ethics Board.
And who does your loyalty run to? Does it run to?
The client is the village as a whole.
So then your client is people within the village that you could talk to, even with competent ethical obligation.
No, I don't have any ethical obligations to individuals. And you have to be draw that distinction. My duty of loyalty is to the majority of the board, however they want to go.
But I think until we determine, I think there's questions of potential conflicts there that until and unless we decide, look, this might be a crime, it needs to go to you, or we need your help with something, then it goes to you. But until then, I think it should be kept to the smallest number of people on a very small need to know basis.
I agree. I mean, when you look at the issues of confidentiality we had with the last complaint, that was a problem.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Okay, so C is now B. Any issues with what was C and is now B? Within a reasonable time after the receipt of the complaint, the commission shall meet and conduct an initial review of the sufficiency of the complaint. The commission may dismiss a complaint if any of the criteria are met. Any issues with any of those criteria as we get down to D? Okay. How about what is D, which is going to become C? Any changes for there?
I did not know.
Yes. We just said that we're not going to be giving a copy of the complaint immediately upon the determination that there's a reasonable basis for the complaint. So that first sentence needs to be out.
Oh, you're talking about no, it what says, it now be.
It says if the commission determines that a complaint passes the initial review, it will send the complaint.
Okay, I'm at page 14, C2B. It's highlighted in purple here. A copy of the complaint shall be provided to the village attorney, village administrator, village president, and village board of trustees immediately upon the determination that there is a reasonable basis for the complaint. I think we just decided we weren't going to do that.
No, that's not what we decided. What we decided is that we didn't have to send it to them prior to making the determination that there was a reasonable basis. It comes in, we have an initial review, we make a determination whether or not we think that there is a reasonable basis for the complaint. If we determine that there is a reasonable basis for the complaint, then we can provide it.
But so, this is saying we will provide it to all of those people. And that seems wildly broad to me. I'm not sure all those people need to be involved before we've done our investigation.
No, it says upon the determination that there is a reasonable basis for the complaint. So we send it to those people. Upon
right. So
afterwards,
at this point. Well,
I mean, it's public now, right?
So notices is this the point where we've decided something has
it's
happened?
It's not public at that point.
I mean, it will be, though, if it's
potentially
going
there's, you know, what we've got here is a two-tiered process, which is an initial determination that there's an issue at all. And then you may need to do more investigation. For example, if somebody makes a complaint and says, hey, this contractor is sending money to the village administrator, you know, there's a bribe going on here. We would look at the complaint and determine whether or not the complaint itself has, you know, has any legs, looks as if it's reasonable, if mm-hmm. there's, you know, facts and dates and so forth, at which point we may need to conduct more of an interview.
So if we move forward to subsection D, it talks about until subsection D, we're still at that initial first tier phase. Subsection D takes us to the next phase where we start the formal process of looking into the complaint.
Right.
And so on tier one, I don't think a copy of the complaint shall be provided to all of those people without, I think that's really challenging the anonymity of it and the but confidentiality of it.
Once we determine that there's a reasonable basis for the complaint,
but we haven't investigated. We've just said, okay, we will take this complaint. That's all we're saying. We're taking the complaint in and we're going to start looking into it. We're saying it's not a crime that we're giving to the attorney. It's not, you know, frivolous. It's not any of these things that fall into, you know, the listed items on page 15.
Why don't we make it discretionary and just change shall to may? Because, for example, if there's a complaint about an ongoing problem, we would want the discretion to be able to advise them that there's an issue. What if somebody's, you know, covering up a safety issue? We'd want to be able to say, okay, this looks this at our initial review, there's reasonable grounds and we're going to need to investigate more, but there's people we need to notify at this point.
Can we say that it may be provided to any of those people on a need to know basis only in order to ensure the confidentiality? Because at the bottom, we talk about, you know.
Well, we say any person to whom the complaint is provided prior to the determination of initial review is bound by all anonymity provisions set forth in the code.
But this is kind of like, you know, I practiced employment law. And when HR gets a complaint, they don't just go send it to all the managers. They keep it on a need to know basis, right? So I might not even tell the manager that one of their subordinates made a complaint against them. I might just go talk to them, right? And so I really think it needs to be done on a as small of a group as possible on a need-to-know basis and within the discretion of the commission, because there might be people who think, well, we do need to have, you know, the public works manager know about this because for whatever reason. But I think it's important that it be kept confidential, anonymous to the extent possible, and as small of an issue as possible. We should be practicing with great discretion here.
I think we covered that by changing shall to may and we can put at the discretion of the commission, because at that point we can just make a determination who it is that we think we need to bring into the fold.
I have a quick question here, just generally. Are we envisioning a limited non-public process that goes beyond the initial gatekeeping? Because I think that might be a legal issue.
No non-public. I mean, and everything would have to be done pursuant to a public meeting, but these types of complaints are typically initially assessed in executive session.
Well, you have a very limited ability to go into closed session. I can justify it in my own mind legally if you're so a quasi-judicial board can only go into closed session not to conduct a hearing. You can't do it. You can go into closed session to discuss testimony and evidence that's already been given in the open. Okay, that's the only way you can do it. And
the Ethics Committee in Cook County, every single complaint was taken in where we discussed it after what the process there was. There, a complaint would come in. They had staff that would investigate things. They would do interviews and so forth, and then they would write up a memo that would then be presented to the commission, the Ethics Committee, and we would look at that in executive session.
Well, that's why I said you couldn't do the hearing in closed session. No. You could go in to discuss. So in the gatekeeping, what you could discuss is the four corners of the complaint, because that's evidence.
Could we discuss who is on a need-to-know basis? Before we conduct the hearing, before we're conducting any investigation.
I suppose. It would be part and parcel of whether there's sufficient evidence.
So I think we address that at the end of 2A. We talk about, I just want to make sure that the language there is correct from your legal perspective.
Well, what I was getting at, do we envision a gatekeeping of the reasonable grounds and then an investigatory period and then a hearing? Because what I thought is gatekeeping, and then if there's a basis to move forward, you set it for hearing. And if you want to issue a subpoena or you want to make people come, you let them know and everyone's notified there's going to be a hearing, including all people affected, and it's public. That's what I thought.
I don't know. That's part of my, I didn't follow all of this, and I didn't have the benefit of being involved in drafting the first session, and I don't have the expertise that Peggy has. So that sounds reasonable to me that there would be.
If you look at what's now D, it says, if the commission determines that a complaint passes an initial review, the commission shall send by certified mail return receipt requested a notice to the respondent that the complainant has been filed against him and a copy of the complaint within a reasonable time after sending the complaint to the respondent. The commission shall meet to further review, right? I mean, this is exactly what's being laid out here. I mean, you don't want to have a full hearing on nonsense complaints. Somebody can file a complaint, I don't like my boss because, you know, she looked at me sideways. That's not going to constitute a violation of it, and nothing else would ever need to be happening.
Right, it would get kicked out at the gatekeeper.
Right, so there is in fact a gatekeeping initial review that's set out here pretty clearly, and then there's, you know, a more formalized hearing.
Right. But the hearing, to your point, I guess, Chairman, it doesn't, a hearing is a hearing, whether it's on a motion or whether it's a hearing doesn't need to be evidentiary. Like, facts may not be in dispute, or, you know, you may think there's sufficient evidence and you just want to confirm it, but you need to give the person who was accused an opportunity to be heard. So that's what you're, it's just basically at its least, it's due process. But again, my point in bringing this all up is, in my mind, we have a private component, which needs to be very limited legally and is okay as long as it's limited to that gatekeeping function. But once you determine it, it warrants going beyond that, it is essentially not a private matter anymore.
Right. I don't think
What we've written here is that the hearing may be closed to the public if authorized by the Open Meetings Act.
If.
So, you know, if it's either, and that's in number 6 on page 16. So, you know, if you as village attorney advise us that whatever next steps must be made public in the public forum and that the could not be conducted in executive session, then, you know, that's what we do.
Anyway, I didn't mean to confuse things, but I thought maybe we were getting into more interim phases here where the confidentiality.
No. I welcome your comments. It's good for, I mean, it's good for all of us to, you know, to level set on what these, what this language means. So, where were we? I think we were last, we were on page 14, a copy of the complaint may be provided to the village attorney, village administrator, village president, and village board trustees upon the determination that there's a reasonable basis for a complaint. The village administrator shall assign village staff to support the commission in the discharge of its duties under this section. Any other changes to that language?
I really do think it needs to have language in there that says that to honor confidentiality and or anonymity, all of these communications need to be on a need to know basis. I don't know what the formal legislative words are for that, but
I kind of disagree here. I think we've talked about anonymity here. We're talking about how it's already dense and too long. I think we're getting the point across here. But, you know, if you have specific language you want to propose, you know, let's hear it and then we can make a determination.
I'll work on that at the next meeting. I'll have language proposed.
Okay. Instead of at the next meeting, can we circulate prior to this so that we can get this finished?
Sure.
Okay. Anything on C, within a reasonable time after the receipt of the complaint?
In that paragraph we're just looking at, a copy of the complaint shall not be provided to any person who is subject to the complaint unless and until the commission shall determine that the complaint passes initial review pursuant to section 123.8C2D. I think we jumbled some of these again, where C2D is no longer the C2D we were referring to. I think it's now C2.
Oh, good catch.
B.
Let me highlight that and I'll say review and fix when I do.
I want to make sure if we're citing to another part, we need to make sure we're citing to the right part.
No, it's a great catch.
May I suggest maybe a way to kind of a formatting change? It seems like there's this initial review is this first meeting immediately after the complaint, and then there's a further review meeting and then ultimately hearing if the commission determines that. Maybe as we're kind of getting confused over the different steps, maybe we call them step one meeting, step two meeting, step three meeting, just to have almost like a grievance procedure language or something that kind of clearly has it escalating, just rather than the different subsections here, just food for thought.
I agree with that. I think it makes it easier for everyone in the village to understand.
What do we call one? preliminary review and investigative hearing and make sure they're just distinguished?
Or are we saying preliminary review and then a hearing if it's warranted?
An investigative hearing if warranted.
Yeah, well, again, that's my question. It seems like some of us are thinking there are like actually three steps. Or are you by investigative hearing, do you mean if it's necessary, there's going to be an interim step and then a hearing on, you know, it just seems to me that enough where you do the gatekeeping, you set it for hearing. It's like a ticket.
But also in theory, we could do the gatekeeping function, call it preliminary review. Either we throw it out or we say it passes muster. We need to investigate this. We conduct an investigative hearing, an open hearing where we take witnesses, we obtain documents, whatever the case may be. And then at that point, we have to deliberate on what we found.
And that
right?
You could do in closed session.
We can do that in closed session. Thereafter, we can either make a determination, finding, and recommendation, or we could theoretically say we need additional information and reopen
Correct.
The investigative hearing.
Sure, you could. But in my mind, that's still gatekeeping hearing.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I'm struggling with whether or not it's a two-step or three-step process.
Well, I think it depends. And I think it's all in here. I mean, maybe what we just need to do is have some headers in here. Because when you look at B, we're going to be B, but is C here. Within a reasonable time after the receipt of the complaint, the commission shall meet and conduct an initial review. So maybe we just put the initial, we put this in the right order and just put initial review underlined colon, right? I think all of it's here. It just may need to be put in a little different order and put some headers in. I don't think anything's missing here.
I don't disagree with that.
I don't disagree either. And I think having a header and identifying this is the stage we're at and here's what's happening at this stage is very helpful.
Okay. So I will see what I can do on edits. What I'm going to take these notes that I've been like I did last time, and I'll do a new red line. What would be helpful for me to receive is if I can get that last version of the clean version of it. Was that in Word? I'm trying to remember. Was that a PDF?
I shared it in Word on the 25th, but then as part of the packet, it was maybe a PDF.
Can you send it to me again as a Word
yep.
document? Because I know what I don't want to have one of those red lines that has seven different versions of edits on it. I want to take the clean copy from what I know has been approved here. From the old versions based on, you know, anybody have any problems with page one, page two. And then I want to circulate a red line that is just the changes from tonight. Is that acceptable to the other commissioners, or are you good with that?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that would be really helpful. I mean, and to be really clear, what we need is a Word document with all track changes accepted. And all comments deleted.
Yes.
Everything so that it is just a clean Word document as though it was just freshly typed up, if you will, so that we can work from that point and really bring this home.
Yeah. And I'll make the edits that I have that based on our comments, but it's not going to include everything. So, you know, if you both can take a look at it at that point and then add your edits, then hopefully we can get a final one that's acceptable to everybody at the next meeting. Okay, moving on. Anything on page 15? We've moved C, D is now C, B is now D. I'm going to make some edits on this to put the headers in and make sure if I think that there's a better sequencing of these paragraphs. I'll just put it in my version and then you can take a look at it. But I know what we're heading for, which is more clarity, which is always a good thing.
So on page 16, I have questions in number 4 and number 5. There's reference to the attorney designated by the corporate authorities to prosecute such actions.
Yeah, I had a question.
Wait, so is this 4 that starts, if the complaint is deemed to be supported?
Right.
Okay. And where's this language that you're talking about?
In the middle, almost immediately in the middle, the sentence or the line starting with notify in writing.
By corporate authorities to prosecute such actions.
I think we can delete that.
Yeah, and that's why I was asking earlier this. I was thinking about this section as well when I looked at that. There are some ethics ordinances that use that. In other words, they don't have an ethics commission. And when an ethics complaint comes in, like in, I'll just give one example. The complaint is sent to the administrative law judge that's hired by that, whoever that person is, because they have administrative adjudication for the gatekeeping function. And if it passes the gatekeeping function, the ALJ causes a complaint to be filed in the circuit court, and it's dealt with as a civil action, as a code violation. This may be language from some other code like that that got scooped in here, but
I think you're
it
right.
Sounds
it's
like
it's from the old version of it, and we just didn't take it out.
This system, the way it's a closed system, unless it's criminal. That's how I read it.
And is
overall
paragraph 3 the same as paragraph 4, or paragraph 3 is we've sent the notice. And then we're going to have a hearing to determine if there are reasonable.
Yeah, there are some issues in here.
Reasonable grounds to proceed. This should be. We've already done that, right?
Yes.
This is saying you've already done the initial review. And now this is getting notice to the respondent.
For the hearing, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, not necessarily hearing. The commission shall meet to further review the sufficiency of the complaint, and the complaint is supported by sufficient evidence is deemed sufficient to allege a violation to determine whether there are basis of the evidence presented to proceed. Boy, that is
there, just... Yeah, there's duplication here.
Yeah, there sure is.
What will help with this is getting a clean version without any other colors and lines and notes. Just it will really help us see the document for what it is, and it'll allow us to eliminate some redundancy.
Yeah,
well.
I mean, just my own opinion, 3 can be just eliminated because in D above that 3, it's already dealing with the notice that goes out if you do the initial review. And this just talks about doing more reviewing initially.
And 5,
yeah.
5 can be eliminated too.
Yeah. And then also, wherever sufficient evidence appears, I would get rid of it and change it to reasonable grounds, because I think that's the only time that's used is as the gatekeeping function.
Need to review. So we're thinking that 3 is redundant.
It is, unless there is envisioned some sort of a second gatekeeping function where the respondent is present, then you go over it again. It just seems like a lot more.
I agree. I think, are we covered in D? Because this what this is dealing with is notice to both the complainant and the respondent.
I think D covers it.
Yeah.
Yeah. 2D.
I agree. So we're going to delete 3 in its entirety. Any issues with that?
No.
No.
And 4 can go too, I think. It's more notice, the same notice that's covered in D, I think.
I agree.
Hang on, let me read it.
No, because that specific to a hearing.
Okay, four. Complaint is deemed to be.
Yeah, you're.
That's that, yeah, like,
right, we're talking three. About scheduling a hearing and notice.
There's this further review meeting that was covered by that two, and then four is if there's reasonable grounds at
there's
this further
timing
review
in this
meeting,
one.
Then there's a hearing.
Yeah, honestly, the more I look at this, it looks like there is, and it's not that clear, but it looks like what may be envisioned by some of this is there's an initial seek more private gatekeeping, and then if there's enough to go forward to the next step, the respondent and the complainant who's been identified said, we're going to look at it. And then you look at it again in a preliminary way, but with the respondent and the complainant. And then if you think there's enough that you want to go further, you schedule it for a hearing. I just don't know that that's necessary. I don't know.
I don't think it's necessary either.
I don't either.
As all that, it seems.
No.
Yeah, it's redundant.
And if it's not necessary, then I think a lot of this can get cut, which might address Commissioner DeGroff's concerns to some degree, simplifying.
Oh, yeah. It'll help a lot, I would think. So is it the determination that we want to lose four as well?
The four talks about noticing up the hearing, but...
Yeah, some of four may need to get...
But D can include that.
Yeah, there might be need to be a little more detail.
Oh, it's already in there. Shall advise them of the date, time, and place of the commission hearing.
Yeah. So you can
this one says it's got to be within 4 weeks of the complaints receipt. We're not required to have that time frame in the statute if we don't want it.
I think at one point we say, and I don't remember where it is, but I know we talked about it at the last meeting, where we talk about what the intent of making determinations as soon as, you know, as soon as we're capable or as early as possible. And I think that covers us. I mean, obviously, the intent of the commission should be to move with reasonable speed.
Commissioner, I think that was specific to complaints filed within a certain amount of days of a local
right,
election.
That's a little
that was
late.
Talked
that's
a lot about
right.
that, expediting
that
the process for that. Which
number 9 on page 17. But I agree that the goal should be to do that as soon as reasonable,
as practical,
possible. Right?
And
not because if you put an end date in there, then there's a tendency to think we want it. We have all that time. There's no rush. On the other hand, you know, sometimes there may be situations that make that impossible. I don't think it's fatal if you do have a date like that. My experience is these internal deadlines, if you have them, if they're ever challenged in court, in other words, if you make a determination and you miss your own deadline.
Exactly.
Let's say someone challenges it and said, oh, you missed your deadline. Courts typically find those kind of self-imposed limitations as directory rather than jurisdictional, which means they aren't going to throw it out for that. But having said that, I think it's better to give yourself a goal of being as fast as possible. To me, that doesn't create worries that you're going to take all that time, and it also doesn't tie you down to something.
Can we include a new paragraph under 123.8b that says the commission shall have the following powers and duties, and include a duty that is the commission shall work as quickly as possible, as practical.
Sure, that could
to resolve
there.
The complaints. And then
it covers everything.
Yeah.
That would work.
Mm-hmm.
And then just eliminate all the other stuff that deal with that.
Okay, I've got the note. I'm back on 16, page 16. And I'm looking at sub 5, 6, 7. Any comments on those?
Yeah, 5 and 6 seem redundant as long as that D above has enough detail and we're calling what the second step a hearing. 7 would be needed, I think, because that tells you you're going to
I think five absolutely could be stricken.
Okay. About six.
I think it looks good.
And then under seven, you might want to eliminate the within 30 days because the duty to deal with everything as quickly as possible would be covered by that. You're going to, you know, if it's, you're going to issue a decision, as soon as we can do it, we will. That's our duty. So you don't need to set a deadline like that.
About as soon as practicable?
Right. Or it could be considered covered by this general duty to do everything, the commission under this chapter, as soon as is reasonably possible. Time is, you know, time is important in these matters.
I honestly have no problem with this provision. If we're going to change it to as soon as practicable, because it's basically saying, hey, you got to do one of three things. We're talking about the sequencing here of what you're going to do, what the, you know, what this process is. And the end of that sequence is you're going to have to do one of these three things.
Correct.
What are the three things?
Dismiss the complaint or issue a recommendation. And then it says, or if the village of blah, 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 the findings. So it's two things. The findings in this case, any recommendations for discipline and any fines shall not be confidential and shall be a matter of public record. So it's two things.
Yeah, you either dismiss it or you issue a recommendation.
Right. And I think it's good to have that clear.
I agree.
Any comments on eight?
Nothing other than I don't think a hearing can be closed to the public. The hearing itself cannot be. The deliberation can be.
Well, this says if.
Yeah, I'm just saying, I'm pointing that out, just to, so you know, you're not.
Right.
I don't think we need it.
I don't either.
All right, we can get rid of it. Any issues with nine?
No, I think we went over that the last meeting pretty clearly.
10 is where we need to refine about the commission may fine.
Yeah, I've got that note.
Okay.
Recommend, yeah.
I've got the commission may recommend that the Board of Trustees may fine.
I mean, consider whether some of that's already covered by seven. Those may be able to be combined or.
All right, I'll make a note to review. Okay.
I have one other idea if we're talking about consolidating. And 11, which is essentially a statute of limitation or ordinance of limitation, may be better placed in the filing section about filing a complaint rather than here, which is about issuing decisions.
Well, we actually have, that may be a little, in the next page under 123.9c,
yes.
We say, notwithstanding other provisions herein, enforcement under this action may not be initiated more than 24 months after the
okay. Well, anyway, we got
to. So we got to get the, consistent, too. Yeah.
I
think it should go under 123.10, how to make a complaint. And here's your time limit on making the complaint.
So we should just delete then 11 and then modify C if it's not redundant to eliminate that provision. It's only about limitations.
I'm sorry. So what are we doing here?
So I think we can eliminate 123.8 on page 17, that Arabic numeral 11. That can just be eliminated.
And where are we picking up the statute of limitations then?
Well, it's already in 123.9c, but it has been suggested by Commissioner DeGroff that it may be better placed in the filing section, how to make a complaint, providing limitations there. So someone who's looking at this, how do I file a complaint, sees there's a limitation period, which would be in 123.10. And if you do that, then you take it out of not only 11, which we eliminate, but also you would take it out of 123.9c, but some of that may still need to stay there if it's not totally redundant. It looks like it says other things here, as well as the limitations period. So maybe just take out the language with the limitations period, move it to the next section, 123.10.
And then relative to the limitations period, we had two time frames referenced in here, one of 12 months and one of 24. So we should get on the same page.
I think we should take the longer one, the 24.
I agreed.
Okay. So we're going to get rid of this. All right. Now we're on enforcement and penalties. Any comments on that?
One point is our fines are anywhere from $50 to $750. And I'm not advocating for this, but I want to point out that the model ethics ordinance from Illinois provides for penalties of up to $2,500.
Let's increase it.
Yeah. Well, you can increase it. I'm going to need to confirm how high we can go. As a non-home rule municipality, we'll need to double check that.
That's a wonderful thing to do. Thank you. Definitely don't want to draft it in a way that's not enforceable. That's a great catch, by the way. Very, very good. Anything else in enforcement and penalties?
The last two sections.
We say here, members of the public are encouraged to bring violations of the ethical standards to the attention of the village board, but it should say to the attention of the ethics committee.
That's true. Where is that?
It is 123.9D.
D, okay.
It's also in C.
Oh, it is in C. That's where I read it. Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay, let's see.
123.9C. It's the second to last sentence.
To the attention of the ethics board, ethics commission. Yeah, so I'll just change that to ethics commission, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other edits?
None from me.
Same.
So we move on to how to make a complaint. I've got to go to the clean copy because that's where all of that is.
So I think on section A, how to file the complaint, I think we need to be very clear about how a person can file a complaint. I like the idea that there's two different ways. I think there needs to be an anonymous way to also file the complaint.
I don't think we should be encouraging anonymous complaints, quite frankly, because they are very difficult to deal with. We can deal with them for sure, but I don't want to be encouraging anonymous complaints.
We provide that they can be filed anonymously. So I think we need to have our current methods are to either fill out a form on the village website or send Peggy an email. Yeah. I think we need to be very clear about what email we're using and maybe have a designated email because you don't want somebody sending it to your work email. And I suppose somebody could create, you know, a fake Gmail account and send it, but
sure, FOIA people do that all the time.
But
anonymous FOIAs, they create a
So here's the thing on anonymity. Our commission, the way I see it, has an obligation to create to maintain the confidentiality or anonymity at that initial stage, that initial preliminary stage. Though receiving a complaint from that's nameless, I don't know how we could ever, with a nameless complaint, say that we get past preliminary. I mean, who is this person? How do they even know what it is they're alleging?
You can get past an anonymous complaint if there's enough detail that's verifiable, right? So
if we take the recent complaint, that could have been filed anonymously, and we could have investigated that.
That's correct.
But at some point, the person who's the subject of the complaint has the right to know who's making the complaint against them and what the complaint is, right? And how could that part ever be satisfied if the initial complaint comes in without any name attached to it, such that, you know, if it comes in and it, you know, here's my complaint, so-and-so did this, thank you, anonymous, and we have no idea who whatever came from, how could that person ever have due process on the complaint?
Well, they have due process in that the, you know, these are the allegations. They said that you were, you know, doing this on Tuesday the 24th, and here's where you took a bribe, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, if it's documented and verifiable, if somebody attaches, for example, you know, and I've done hotline complaints in the employment area before, where they attach documents and they say, here, this is, I want to be anonymous, but here's the complaint, and here's all the documentation that supports it. That doesn't violate due process. You don't need to have the name of a person to attach to the complaint if you've got authenticated documentation that shows that the allegations are supported.
I think there could be a dialogue, right? Like, we could respond to the fake Gmail account and say, this is when the hearing is. We need you to show up. Like, if it's a personal ethical violation, and if the person doesn't show up, then we don't have, you know, I don't know what rules of evidence apply, but that would seem problematic. If all we have is an anonymous complaint, then we can't, you know, and that person refuses to become known at a hearing.
It depends upon what the allegations are, right? I mean, if there is an allegation of financial fraud and somebody sends you authenticated documentation, you don't need their name to review it. If it's a he said, she said, you know, on this date, somebody said this thing to me, then, and they won't come forward, then you don't have actual evidence of it. It's hearsay that you probably can't consider. And you certainly can't make a determination whether or not it's credible. So
that's my point is, as a trial attorney, I don't know how you could determine whether or not anything's ever been authenticated if you don't know who sent it to you.
It's documents from the village itself.
Well, it would cause
if it's us a self
to do an investigation,
a document. It's possible,
it's
but
possible,
unlikely.
I guess, theoretically,
you know. And I mean, something the commission could do, and you look at it in the gatekeeping. You might say, well, based on this complaint, an essential part of the validity, there may be enough here, but the credibility of the person is critical. If that's the case, then you could setting it for hearing, but please be advised, we understand this was an anonymous complaint, but it's been determined that your credibility is part of this whole process.
Right. So you have to participate in the process. You can be anonymous when you make the complaint, but I also think that to your point, at some point they need to be able to be communicated with and may need to make themselves known depending on the circumstances of the case. And I think it's possible to create an anonymous form or send it by an anonymous email that states that on, you know, the website that says you can file an anonymous complaint. But
I really don't want to encourage anonymous complaints for the exact reason that we've just described. It's can we take in an anonymous complaint and review it and make a determination on a case by case basis? Sure. But I don't want to encourage anonymous complaints.
If I could draw an analogy, and Matt, I just said this privately to Matt kind of on the side, the Freedom of Information Act provides for no anonymous requests, but the PAC has determined that anonymous requests are valid. There's no procedure for how to do it, but boy, a lot of people figure out how to do it. You know, email addresses that don't go anywhere, and they, you know, so it happens the time.
I think part of I'd included under section B here, kind of prescribing what should be included in a complaint, because separate from ethics complaints, we've gotten emails from kind of dummy email addresses about someone that felt that the library owed them for copies when it closed at 5 o'clock, and we didn't know who it was. We didn't know when it was. And we had to kind of like try and track it down ourselves. And same thing happens with Village Services on our service request portal. If someone want the tree in front of the house removed, oh, but they didn't give us their address. Not very useful. So the idea with this is to try and get as much as possible. If they don't have their name, that there would be at least some expectation that this person did X on this date and this information here. So it's not, I don't want this form to be filled out by a resident that it just has random complaints and that aren't necessarily specific to this without any detail and the expectation that we have to convene the three of you just to say this is dismissed.
So where have we landed? At least I don't think we should be encouraging anonymous complaints, but I think we should be accepting them for review.
We can make it so it's not mandatory for those identifying fields.
But I'm interested in what my colleagues here think.
I'm just of the mindset that if you're going to make a complaint, you should. Again, our body, and we can make it very clear, and I think we do in the code, keeps it anonymous unless there's reason to go forward and actually charge somebody with a violation potentially of the code. So I think the fact that complaints are confidential until that point in time is more than sufficient. I'm of the mindset that we don't accept anonymous complaints, but again, you know, that's my thought process. If the other commissioners think otherwise, I'm not going to put up a stink about it. That's just how I feel about it.
I think you have to accept anonymous complaints despite the confidentiality provision. I mean, if you look at the one complaint that we've received in the last 3 years, that confidentiality provision was broken. And there's a real reason why some people may want to file anonymously. It goes to the credibility of the report. It goes to whether or not we can even possibly find sufficient facts to find that there are reasonable grounds, right? It's what you take into consideration. But I would hate to prevent an anonymous complaint that was heavily supported by written records of a major violation of this code.
I agree with you, Peggy.
So on the thanks.
It's how I feel. I'll defer to the, you know, the two of you as you believe that and of that opinion, and that's fine. I just, you know, you asked for where we were at, and that's where I'm at on it.
Yeah, and I get that, and as I said, I really do think it goes to credibility. If you get an anonymous you'd get an anonymous complaint, you look at it. But it's It's very difficult to find reasonable grounds on an anonymous complaint, particularly, you know, when most of those complaints are this person said this thing or I heard this thing. You can't find reasonable grounds on that. I think it's I think it's a very limited set of circumstances under which you could find reasonable grounds, and that would be with serious documentation. So I just don't want to prevent that from being received. Anything else we should be reviewing, thinking about, talking about on this? I'm in the 123.10, how to make a complaint. Anything there? I agree. We got to have an email address. It's got to make it easier.
Or also that you can may take either of the following actions.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Agreed.
So how is the email address monitored? That gets tricky. I mean, we say there's an email address, but, you know, Peggy, you're the current chair, and, you know, how does that get? I mean, are you on a daily basis logging into your Village River Forest credentials to see if you got an email there? I mean, how is that address monitored?
I don't even have Village of River Forest.
That's what I'm getting at.
If you can have it forwarded to somebody's account, like, it'll just go to your main,
right?
It's the Village account, but it's forwarded and it automatically shows up in your Gmail or your work account.
So my guess is that it would be possible to create a Village email address that is called ethics complaints or something, you know, at, and then it would go there and then it would be forwarded as directed by the commissioners.
Okay.
That's perfect.
Whoever the acting chair is shall have an email on file to receive forwarded complaints from.
I think you could just create a rule in the email when you
correct.
Set up that.
I have it all the time.
Yeah.
So I do village attorney work where I'm in the villages more that are larger. And in each of those places where I have office hours, I have an email address. I don't ever look at it because they're all forwarded to my.
Just automatically happens.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, that's good.
We're going to say to people, you can make a complaint via email. I don't want it getting lost.
Right.
I think it would be something like, as you mentioned, you know, at ethics at, you know, River Forest, blah, blah, blah. And then it gets pushed to whoever we direct it to, who would be whatever the current chair is.
Yes. Yep. We can do that. And the forum would submit the same way. It would go ultimately the submission would go through that same email process too. But.
And then there could also be a backup. It could be copied to one of the commissioners so that.
I agree.
Then you could then just call the chair and say, I happened to check this. Did you see this? You know.
Yes.
Yeah, I have no problem with giving it to everybody because ultimately the chair's responsible.
That's probably the best bet.
Right. Yeah.
Because it could get lost, you know, get caught in spam.
And we would be none the wiser.
Right.
Staff, right.
Right.
Yeah. All right. So, yeah, then each commissioner will always have an email on file for those complaints to be forwarded.
Okay. Anything left on 123.10?
Not for me.
Not for me.
Okay. Any new business?
None from me.
Same.
Any other business?
No.
Nope.
Okay, so what I'm going to do, and I probably won't be able to get to this until Monday, I will take these notes and make the changes like I did last time as soon as I can get a clean version back in Word, and then I will send that to Matt, and then he can send that out, and then you guys can make whatever red line edits you want to, and then hopefully at the next meeting we can knock it out.
I am out of the country next week and with very limited cell access, so I can get to it as soon as I get back the following week.
So that actually kind of dovetails into what I was going to say. We should just have an agreed process so that we're not making overlapping edits. So given that you're going to travel, Peggy, when you're done, I'll be the next person to look at
it.
I'll add on to your comments. Then when you're back, then you can see both of our Perfect. Comments. And then that way we don't have overlapping.
Sounds good.
Great. And do we want to set a time for the next meeting?
When are we thinking? April?
I am leaving the country as of the 9th. I'm gone from the 9th to the 21st. How about the 26th of March?
It's spring break that week.
Okay.
And
no.
How about
the 2nd? Oh, I can't do the 2nd. That doesn't work. How about the 8th? April 8th?
I can do April 8th.
I'm not going to be able to do the 8th.
Is there another day that week you can do?
I can do the 7th.
You're leaving the 9th. I can't do the 7th either.
And you leave the 9th. I can do the 9th. I'm leaving for Boston, and then the next day I leave out of the country. So I could do the 9th, the evening of the 9th.
I mean, just to throw it out there, I mean, I can also, does it have to be in the evening?
No,
it doesn't have to be. We generally do that for meetings, but daytime would be fine if that works best for the commission.
Works fine for me.
On the 9th?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't know. Just saying, like, Peggy, I don't know what time you're leaving on the
9th. I'm flying most of the day on the 9th.
I'm just trying to, like, get it. It was just seeing if that makes it earlier made it easier for you.
Well, are there any days?
Other than that?
March 31st that we can do during the day?
Which day?
The week of March 31st during the day.
Sure.
I could do some, yeah.
I can't do the 1st or 2nd.
I can do the 3rd or 4th.
I can do the 3rd as long as we're done by noon.
Yeah, I can do that.
Yep.
So 10 a.m. on the 3rd?
That works.
What day of the week is
it? That's a Thursday.
I can make that work.
Okay. All right.
Okay. I've got it. Any other business?
None.
All right. Let's adjourn the meeting. Thanks, everybody. Really Thank appreciate you. All the thoughtful work that was surfaced
here. We do a motion second.
Good stuff. Second. All those in favor say aye.